Okay, hi, I'm Teresa Ader, and I oversee the Grace Kids Children's Ministry and love what I do, love the leaders that we work with and the staff that we work with. I have Molly here. She's one of my awesome directors.
Hello, thank you.
So glad you're here. And we just want to say thank you for joining us as we talk about the phases of a second and third grader. So this class is not going to tell you everything you need to know about parenting or even about second and third graders. And so we just suggest that you would take what you know about your second or third grader and couple that with the information that we'll talk about today to be the best parent that you can. We know that not every parent is perfect, but every parent wants to be a better parent. So, you know, we talk a lot about the only guarantee we have is that you will mess up. Parenting is hard.
We know that from experience,
yes,
don't we,
we
Teresa?
Do. I have five kids. My oldest is married, so we have a bonus child, too. And Molly, how many kids do you have?
Yeah, I also have five.
And you have some married, lots of married ones, though.
Two married ones. Two married, and some grandkids.
So we've been doing this a little while. My oldest is 27. Our youngest just turned 16 last week. So wide range of ages, but every stage and phase is fun, and we're going to talk today about second and third.
Yeah, and I just want to say every phase is important, and every phase needs to be understood because it really lays a foundation for the next phase. So we want to talk about second grade first. This is really, you could say, the essence of childhood. So many people love second grade because second graders are so sweet and
they
so
love
loving, and they're so into their parents. And anything you say, you can pretty much talk them into it. They just really want to have fun at this stage, so they're kind of up for anything. And you can say, want to go camping? They're going to say, sounds like fun. Woo! Want to dance? Sounds like fun. Want to wash the car? I mean, you can even get them excited about doing chores at this age if you kind of
motivate them by
fun. For sure. Yeah. They're going to say, yes, let's have fun. So they are very adventurous at this time. And so it's really a time for you as a parent to kind of put on your adventurous side or get adventurous if you haven't been and kind of enjoy them and maybe even do some things that you haven't done before you can enjoy with your child. Looking back on this phase, in my parenting experience, man, at second grade, you're not wiping hinies anymore. And they're kind of independent. They can get their own cereal. And it's so lovely. And you can have an actual conversation, adult conversation with your husband. And it's kind of tempting to want to disengage a little bit. But really, this is not the time to disengage. We want to really stay engaged with our kids. We do want to raise independent children so we can get a little excited, but they definitely really need us still at this time.
Yeah, it's definitely good to recognize that while they are independent, it's easy to disconnect in really in every phase. You find yourself in moments where you feel like, okay, they're okay for now. And that's okay to do every once in a while. But I think what Molly said about just honing in and pressing in a little bit deeper when it feels like they're getting more independent because they want and crave your attention and need that engagement.
Yeah, another thing we should mention about second graders is they really have a sense of right and wrong.
Very dualistic.
Yeah, they're very eager to know what is right, and they really still believe what you say is true.
Yeah.
So it's a great time when you're being adventurous with them or when you're engaging them in some of these fun opportunities. If they're outside helping you wash the car, it's a great opportunity to just have a conversation about faith or character or, man, doesn't it feel great to work hard? Isn't it fun to be together and spend time together? Isn't it, you know, wow, you missed a spot, but isn't it going to be great when the car looks so wonderful for Grandpa? He's going to be so happy that we served him this way. And you can just build character in the everyday things that you do. But
for sure
this second grade phase isn't going to last forever. You're building great memories together, but they're going to move into the transition of third grade soon.
Yeah, third grade. And third grade, I think, like second, is very much a sunshiny, fun time. But they are starting to think a little bit deeper and have a little bit more acknowledgement and awareness of who they are and their insecurities. It's a year of discovery and soul-shaping challenges. It's another season of adventure. They'll still have that childlike innocence of enthusiasm for life and wanting to embrace new experiences. They're still in the sounds like fun phase. They have a natural, you know, optimistic outlook. You know, I think we forgot to say at the beginning, but, and you probably have heard this before, a phase is just a time frame in a kid's life where we can leverage distinct opportunities to influence their future. And that's really what parenting is about. It's leveraging all of the opportunities that we have at each phase to help them grow as an adult. And in second, when they're in second grade, you have 572 weeks left with them until they turn 18. And then when they're a third grader, you have about 520 weeks with them until they turn 18. And so we really want you to know that in third grade, as your child is optimistic, there's going to have some real challenges in their school year. You probably know that if they're in the middle of their third grade year.
Multiplication tables.
Yes.
Yikes.
Multiplication, grammar rules. I still struggle with those.
Third grade really ramps up.
It really does. And it kind of, but also there's some fun aspects of the learning, like reading. They discover the joy of reading in about third grade and really can get lost in a book at this age. So finding great books for them to read is going to be a real beneficial to their development and really to your sanity, probably, to give you a few minutes of quiet time. So whatever this phase brings academically, your posture of encouragement, support, unwavering love will set a positive tone for a future of lifelong learning. You know, most third graders are blossoming in their social connections, the relationship they have with friends and even other leaders outside your family. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But those are becoming more and more important to them.
They might even get a best friend in third grade.
That's right. They're going to be, and likely it'll change from week to week, but they're going to begin to feel that deep connection of friendship. And maybe my daughter, who's 16, has a best friend that she did established in third grade, and they're still really tight. So some of these friendships are developing will be lasting.
Teresa mentioned the weeks, that you have 572 weeks, or even less if you have a third grader, 520 weeks left until your child maybe moves on to their next phase in life, being 18 years old, but your child is really halfway through their elementary experience. So cell phone contracts and learner permits are a lot closer than you think, because your kid is growing up faster than you thought. And I really remember this phase. I remember this time of going, wait, whoa.
Yes.
You know, they're changing. So that's why every week counts. Of course, every week might not feel super significant in the big picture. There's a lot of weeks where you're going to feel like all you accomplished was maybe reminding them to finish that science project.
Or getting them up on time. Yeah, getting them to school on time.
Exactly. But that's okay. You can take a breath. You don't have to get everything done this week. But what happens in your child's life week after week, year after year, adds up over time. And so
I think it's really important.
Good idea to think about how many weeks you have left so you can really take advantage of the time you have now.
Yeah.
And I think maybe we should say something too about, you know, maybe you haven't been parenting through the phases up until this time.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, you're jumping in second and third grade and you think, oh, but I didn't pay attention to kindergarten or the twos.
That's a good point.
You know what? It's okay. God meets us right where we're at. And we just do what we can when we know to do it. And God's going to meet us. He's faithful and he loves our kids.
He does. And I say this a lot of the time, is he created you and designed you to be your kids' parents, even in your weaknesses. So when we mess up and our failures, if we haven't been engaged the way that we wish we would, he uses that to develop their character and really to develop your character. It's in our failures that we learn, and the same is true with our kids. And so I think it's so important, and I remind myself of this all the time, that I'm not a perfect parent, but I'm the perfect parent for my kids, and that God, in the way he designed our family, even in our weakness, even in our flaws, he builds character in us and in our kids because of that. So that's a great point, Molly. Thanks for bringing that up. I think in second and third grade, something that's important to note is that fairness matters most. Mm-hmm. Like Molly said, they're very dualistic thinkers, but they want to know that it's fair. They're going to definitely notice if someone gets two pieces of pizza and they only get one. Cookies.
Their eyesight's good at that age.
And so they are, you know, really wanting to know that everything is fair. If the teacher passes out a paper, they want to make sure everyone gets the right one. And they're going to let people know when things are not fair.
Absolutely.
And so I think kind of keeping that in mind, knowing they're not trying to get other people in trouble, because you always looking at their character, but it's really part of who they are at this age. They're wanting to make sure and know everything's fair. So they're going to be like investigators and wear their badge and apprehend people quickly. So the world of a third grader is highly defined. They think, like I said, dualistically, and they're right or wrong. So someone's either good or bad. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're very concrete thinkers at this age. They think like a scientist. And so you can't give your fancy word pictures.
Right.
Like I like to do. My kids their eyes would glass over and they'd just give me that look like, I don't know what you're talking about, because it's just very concrete for them at this age.
Yeah. Their brains are changing in some incredible ways. And they're really beginning to notice, you know, not everyone is like me. Everything was pretty equal until now. And so, they're really trying to understand and comprehend, but just because they're learning at such a great rate and they're growing, it doesn't mean they learn like us. They're like Molly said, they're concrete thinkers, and they learn like scientists. They need to have their hands in it. They want to see what's going on and how things work and why they work the way they work.
Yeah, they're developing their ability to empathize, having feelings for other people. But they're really quick, too, to put people in categories. So they may categorize someone as athletic or not athletic, or artistic and not. Yeah. They're putting differences on people.
And they're labeling their selves. Mm-hmm. It's easy for them to get caught up in a category of not artistic when they really may be an artist. And so encouraging them to continue to try and continue to learn and discover who they are is going to be pretty vital. No one should have a favorite phase, but this is one of my favorites, mm-hmm. just simply because they are learning so much and they're still so tender towards
so
you.
Sweet.
They're still your biggest fan. And everything sounds fun, like Molly was saying. So every child at every age has a crisis that they're facing. And in elementary, in second and third grade, their crisis is school. They're still figuring out this room of 30 people, mm-hmm. and, you know, lunch of hundreds of kids together, and how that all works and how they fit into that, recognizing the differences and being sensitive about their own differences and how they're accepted by that. They're asking a question. They're not saying it out loud maybe, but they are asking constantly the question, do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes to make the team? Do I have what it takes to be a friend? Do I have what it takes to get the grade or to measure up? All of these things they are constantly wrestling with and asking the question, do I have what it takes? So you can provide your kid with the love that they need and to grow and build confidence and answer their question by engaging their interests. We want you to show curiosity about their interests. And this can be hard to do because, let's face it, you know, playing apples to apples over and over again is not the most fun thing for us to do as adults
painful.
All the time. It can be painful. But something that's going to be really important to their development and developing confidence and independence is engaging your child's interests, letting them know that what they think is fun is valuable and important, and spending time with them is valuable and important. So think for a minute, what is your second or third grader like to do? What do they seem to really enjoy right now? And become an expert on that. Engage it with them and just help them discover new things about those topics that they're really interested in.
Yeah, it's so important for them. Do you want to talk briefly now about ways that second and third graders are changing?
Yes.
We can talk about physically first. Of course, that's an obvious one. They continue to lose all those baby teeth, even the molars come out. And they grow 3 inches and gain approximately 7 pounds. And that's usually in spurts. And we have all had that experience, or you will have one if you have a second or third grader, where you wake up one morning and the pants fit yesterday and something happened. And today they're way too short.
Or
there
maybe
was a major,
yeah.
major
or maybe
growth
falling
spurt.
Off. When they grow tall, sometimes they get too big and fall right off.
They play really hard and they tire quickly. And they also need 10 to 11 hours of sleep each night. And then socially, they really enjoy cooperative group activities. But just remember that your second grader still may struggle with those highly competitive situations because, they just want to have fun.
They want to have fun, and they're also categorizing good and bad. And if someone beats them, they're in the bad category.
Yeah, that's stressful.
It is very stressful to him. Like we said, they play place high value on fairness and consistency. They sometimes want to work alone and independent because they want to know they can do it. I remember my third grader was a perfectionist. And so if he did something wrong, he would crumple up that paper 10 or 11 times before he got it
too.
Right. And so helping encourage them that things don't have to be perfect is going to be important. They're probably showing gender preferences for friends at this point, and but they also want to gather in large group of friendships, and they respond to peer pressure. Your child is not unique. They're going to be exposed to things that you don't want to expose them to. They're going to be facing things, and so they're changing socially and learning and being faced with all of these issues. But they're also changing mentally.
Their attention span is really only about 30 minutes this age, but they're increasingly becoming aware of other people's feelings, and that is a lovely thing to watch. They really can focus on one thing at a time, but they still are struggling with those abstract concepts. They really still are thinking in that concrete, things are right and things are wrong, but they are gaining a better understanding of time. Seconds, minutes, hours, days. You remember those previous stages where they had no clue what that meant. We're leaving in 5 minutes or 30 minutes, or the birthday party is in 3 days.
Or the birthday party is tomorrow, is yesterday. We're going to a birthday party yesterday.
Love it.
I guess that might be a phase a little bit further back. But they are definitely gaining concepts of time, and they learn well through hands-on activities, like we said. Problem solving, puzzles that you can do together. And puzzles are a great time to talk. When you're not face-to-face, but when you're sitting and doing a puzzle together, they'll tend to open up a little bit more and let you into their world emotionally. And they're also changing emotionally. So they're better able to control their emotions. But they're highly sensitive to harsh criticism, tone, and body language. I think one thing that's really important for parents to remember is to measure your child's tone or excitement against your reaction. They might come in with muddy shoes or, worms to show you as a gift, kind of like a cat bringing a mouse in there. And if you react in a screaming or angry way, when they're so excited, that's going to cause some tension and cause them to continue to question, am I enough? Like, do I have what it takes? And so I think trying to measure your response to their tone and their attitude, and then watching our own tone, being loving, taking a few seconds to count to 10 before we respond or react, or before we react so that we can respond in love, as something that's hard to do but important to work on. They tend to be perfectionists at this age. Even if their temperament is not a perfectionist, this is the age where they're striving to have what it takes, and so they're going to be a little bit more apt to be a perfectionist. But they thrive with routines. So the rhythms and the routines that you create in your home of getting up, making your bed, brushing your teeth, all of those things are going to be important for their development.
They're definitely
developing a sense of humor.
all those knock knock jokes
knock knock jokes for days, yes, and practical jokes on moms. That's what happened in my house a lot at this age. And they need to experience moderate challenges and successes. There's some things that are going to be important, some conversations that are going to be important to have over the next 572 weeks, that are going to be more important than maybe what you talk about you know, maybe Shark Attacks or Star Wars or Fortnite. I don't know what your kids are into, but they might have less of an impact on their future than what you say regarding health and sex and technology and faith. These are conversations that we need to begin having really in the 0 to 2 phase, and we talk about that in our 0 to 2 phases class. But they're going to become pretty significant in this second and third grade phase, and they're going to get a little bit more deeper, probably awkward, but like I always tell parents, the more you practice, the less awkward it's going to become. And believe me, the less awkward it is, it's going to be a lot less awkward at second and third grade than it is at fifth and sixth.
Definitely. Or teenage.
So it's important to begin those habits. And
Let's start with healthy habits. This year, you're really going to develop a positive routine. So you can really help your child enjoy being healthy, eating right, maybe exercising, and really getting in a rhythm about that. They'll learn to exercise often. And really, it's just basically through things that you do together as a family and things you say. So maybe you encourage, hey, let's go out and play Frisbee. You might not say, we're going to do our exercises right now. But, you know, they don't look at Frisbee as exercise, but they're going to learn to enjoy moving and using their body and running and getting tired. And you could say things like, I love to watch you play. Or some people are naturally better jumpers, but we can all jump higher with patience, you know, because they're starting to weigh themselves against, well, I wasn't as high as so-and-so. You know what? It doesn't matter. You're doing great. Just your jump was perfect.
And practicing, you know, it's a good opportunity to teach them when you work hard at something, you can attain it. You can work, you know, you might not be able to jump 6 feet because of where you're developmentally right now. But the more you practice, the more your body's going to be engaged in that, you know, whatever activity it is. So helping them learn to do that and letting them know you enjoy the time that you're doing it with them, and helping them learn to strengthen their body through exercise, nutrition, self-advocacy, helping them learn what is good for their body, what foods do fuel their body. And of course, they're always going to still want to turn to sugar, but the things that you're instilling in them right now are going to last, and they're going to grow and change.
They'll eat broccoli someday.
Someday they will. I did have one of mine throw up broccoli on his plate because we made him eat it. But you know, the thing about that, about healthy food, is really they say that you need to introduce a food 18 times before they'll actually eat it. And I can tell you from experience with mine, and Molly, I'm sure you found the same thing, you know, where all of mine never liked onions. All but one likes onions now. You know, they never liked broccoli. Now the one that threw up the broccoli, he doesn't eat broccoli still.
Yeah, we were all third graders once.
We were.
We didn't like it either.
We didn't. And so continuing to put a little bit on their plate, not forcing them to eat it, but asking them to try anything, will help them grow in their idea of what food is and what's good for them and what's not. And another conversation to have is sexual integrity. So this year you're going to inform them about how things work so that they understand biology and build social skills in regard to their physical body. Sexual integrity is guarding their potential for intimacy through appropriate boundaries and mutual respect. And so they're going to begin expressing a desire for more privacy in second and third grade as they bathe or as they change. Respond to their signals. Respect what they're feeling and going through, and help them talk through it. Don't disengage them. It's really tempting to disengage when they start saying awkward things or even noticing things that you're not comfortable with them noticing. But the temptation would be to disengage. Don't do it. They need your influence, and they need to discover more and more about sexuality and what a healthy attitude towards that looks like.
This is the time.
Yeah, you can say things like, can we talk about this another time? Always leave room for picking up the conversation another time. When you're caught off guard by a question, you know, practice that poker face. Don't be shocked or appalled, but say, you know,
don't let them see that you're shocked.
Yeah, don't let them. You can be shocked and appalled. Just don't let them see that. But let them know that that's a good question. And you know what? I'm really glad you asked that because it's important for us to talk about. And so maybe give a brief answer and then say, hey, can we talk about this another time? So you have your time to go gain some composure, maybe do a little research, maybe not maybe, but definitely pray about it and come back to them with it. You know, let them know God made sex and it's designed to be a good gift for a husband and a wife, that it's something private, it's not to be watched or observed. And so help them understand that when they see something that they shouldn't, it's not because it's bad, it's something that's private and special mm-hmm. between a husband and wife. Ask them, have you heard words that describe parts of the body or sex that you don't understand or that didn't seem right? And help dialogue with them about that. Like I said earlier, the reality is that you can't shelter your child from the world. Someone's going to define sexy for them. Someone's going to say things or show them things that you wish that they didn't see. They're going to hear words that you don't want them to hear. And so we have little control over those things. The older they get, our positional influence begins to diminish and our relational influence is growing. And so what we can control is the conversations that we have at home and the way that we address it at home. And, you want them to learn about sex from a peer or the media pictures that their friends are showing them on their iPhone? Or do you want them to know about it and the incredible gift that it is from you? And so pushing through the awkwardness, having those conversations with them, that's important in this phase. And something else to consider in regard to healthy view of sexuality is that behind the sexual choices made by older children and adolescents is really the deeper issue of personal character that's learned at home. And so, for example, a dad who's expressing road rage while they're driving, or a mom who tells a white lie to her friends on the phone or even in person, and your kids are recognizing all of those things. And both of those are examples of poor judgment. They demonstrate poor judgment and a lack of discipline. And so those are two qualities that are needed in abundance in those days when they're trying to navigate the waters of peer pressure and adolescence and sexual temptation. My husband actually just said this yesterday. There is no power in the world like teenagers that are, desiring that absolutely. Intimacy and that physical touch. And so we need a comprehensive theology of sexuality filled with applications and character from our own life from the very beginning. And so practicing integrity and character, that's important to their development and their character as a teenager. They need to learn to be able to make those choices out of a place from the heart, not because you said so or because it's not the right thing. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and I think, it's easy when you have littles to just think, I don't want that to come up. I don't want them to be exposed to anything. Yeah. I want to shield everything from them. I want to control everything. But the truth is, you really can't. And so you will, just don't be surprised when you do have these conversations.
That's right.
Another one of the important conversations to have is about technology.
Yeah, technology is a big one. So technological responsibility is leveraging the potential of online experiences to enhance your offline community and success. And these are important things that we're going to be teaching them at this age.
And so you already know that your third grader is way smarter than you when it comes to devices.
For sure.
And that's normal. But even though they're a digital native, they still need a really responsible adult to walk with them as they explore all the things that technology has to offer, the internet has to offer. So we really need to be engaged in this area because we need to help our kids. We need to encourage them. Technology is an awesome thing. It's not going to go away, and it's only going to enhance our life and their lives, and it's going to grow.
And be more prominent.
And be more prominent. Lives, they need to start to learn to handle it responsibly. And I think third grade is probably an age where they can start to become aware too of, hey, not everything is good.
Yeah.
Not everything is something that you need to look at, and you need to be responsible.
Right.
And we walk with them
and help
we
them
guide them
learn
as
the
they're moving through technology. I mean, there's a lot of things we can say, maybe play together, instead of letting them. Technology can really be an isolating thing. It can be something that they just do on their own. But I think we need to engage with them as they're being doing their technology. Play
my
games
husband does this even with our teenagers. He gets on those apps that he downloads the apps that they have and plays with them. And they're, he's much better at it than I am. But I think that's such a great point: is learn the games that they like to play and actually seem interested in and engage with them and help them not feel like it's an isolating tool, but that it's a tool of engagement.
Another thing to ask them is, have you seen anything online that surprised you or bothered you?
Yeah.
And maybe that's something we ask before they bring it up, because I don't know that they're going to necessarily
come and bring it.
So
yeah,
that's a periodic question that is
And letting
good.
Them know that it's you're not asking to get them in trouble.
Right.
It's
they didn't
really
do
hard for
bad.
Yes, they didn't do anything bad. I think for kids who particularly those that are perfectionists, and remember second and third graders typically are, to think you're perfect, you never mess up, because they're the ones always getting in trouble. And of course, parents don't get in trouble, right? And so letting them know this is not a threatening conversation, and I'm not trying to get you in trouble. I'm trying to help you navigate this. So asking the question of, have you seen anything that surprised you? Or is there anything that you want to talk about that you've seen?
Uh-huh.
Giving them space to do that in letting them answer and not trying to fix it in that moment, but allowing them to answer and talking them through it without being condescending, it's really important.
Yeah. And it's very important also to teach your child never to post a phone number or an address without asking you first. And there could be lots of opportunities where they might think that that's important.
Sure.
A game they're playing where they're going to ask, hey, if you want to get more points or jewels or whatever, hey, just put your email address or put some information there. And they're not smart enough at that age to know.
It's not appropriate
at that age.
It's also good to be reminded that they don't remember things as they grow. So like there's conversations that I'll have with that I had with my 10-year-old that when she was 12, I would remind her of, and she would say, you told me that. She actually just did that the other day. We were talking a boundary that she had made, and I said, now you had told me this as a boundary. And she was like, I said that. And so I think it's important to help them remember the boundaries. And if you have a kindergartner that you really taught great boundaries to when they're in second grade, you're going to have to reteach and retalk about those things. And so having these conversations continually are important.
Yeah, and I think you can set boundaries for how much time they spend on their devices or with technology.
Sure.
But that's going to be different for every family. And
Absolutely.
So you're going to have to just pray through that and do what's right for your family. And also have that conversation with your kids to say, you know what, the Aiders, that's
yes.
their value. And they let their children watch for this long. But in our house, this is our value, but their values are still good. You know,
yes.
we're all good. We're all doing the right thing, and we're all, we're going to respect what Tommy's mom wants him to do too, but this is what we're going to do in our family. And let me tell you, it's hard because kids at any age can be very persuasive and very, they want what they want, you know, but this is really an important area to really take the lead and stand our ground and really be involved and engaged so that we can teach them, but we can really protect them too.
Yeah.
Because
I think it's a good, it's a dance that will continually for the rest of their years at home partake in, because it's this balance of help, respecting other families and empathizing with them, but having your own boundaries as a family. And we're not better than this family because we have different boundaries. This is just how we're choosing to walk it out. You know, there's some really great tools. There's some apps that and helpful online software that can help with that. One of the two of the apps that we use are OurPact. It's just OurPact. And with that, I can turn off. I can set screen times and screen limits, and I can. At 10 o'clock, all the apps go off of my daughter's phone. And then in the morning, they, you know, whatever time I set it for, whether it's 5 a.m. or 9 a.m., they come back on. And so particularly when they're younger, you could do it, you know, if they have a phone in seventh grade, you could do it while they're at school. Hmm. Because it's becoming more and more kids are on their phones all day at school. They're not really paying attention. And so OurPact is a great app to help. Life360 we use. Of course, we have drivers. But that is something the whole family can be on and see each other. When you're second and third grade, it seems like far off, but they will start driving in not so many, not so little years. And so knowing how fast they drive and when they stop and if they're using their phone when they drive, those are all things that Life 360 can show you. And so those are some good tools. And there's some others that if you are wanting some, I would love to help you with that. You can email me or give me a call. So another conversation that we're going to want to have is about authentic faith. And this is definitely a conversation that you want to start when they're 0, 2, 3, 4, but that you want to continue to have about an authentic faith and what that looks like, praying with them, talking, you know, reading the word with them, asking, what does this say about God? And what does it say about us? And how does that apply to us? Helping them develop a habit of spending time alone with God. But don't let their faith become private. I think that's something really to work on and work together in. While you do want them to pray on their own and you want them to read the word on their own, you want to be dialoguing with them and helping understand where they're at, what they're thinking, how they're thinking it, and when they're thinking it. All of those things really important to have. Something else to consider is there's going to come a time in fifth and sixth and seventh grade where you're going to want to have those conversations about what the word of God says, or, you know, why we should be influenced one way or the other. And if you pull it out of thin air, they're going to have no credibility to that. So having these conversations and modeling a relationship with the Lord is going to be really developmentally vital as they get into those teen years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, that's what it's all about. We're not promoting these phases or this phase class to talk about psychological stuff or even the physiological. It all points back to teaching them about Jesus and his character and leading them there and either leading them to a relationship with God or enhancing the relationship they already have.
Right.
It's taking these opportunities that God's given us, and instead of saying, oh, it's just a phase, hopefully they'll grow out of it, really enjoying the phases and looking and saying, wow, God's uniquely designed each phase, and we can step in and leverage it for this great opportunity to really lead them to the Lord. So
and I think childlike faith is something I think about with this age, because they do have such a they have an understanding that we don't. I mean, Jesus said, you know, he said that himself, and so I know he said that for a reason, that they grasp things that we feel like they might not grasp,
and they believe
they believe what we say and they believe what God says. I think that's really important. That's hard for us to do, right? To believe what he says, to take him at his word. And yet in second and third grade, they really do. They believe what he says. They take him at his word. This age, you want to make sure that they have a full text Bible. You know, Jesus Storybook Bible is such a great tool. It's a fun tool to read together, but it's really important at their own, this age, that they have their own Bible that they can read through in an easy to read translation. I love the New Living Translation.
Mm-hmm, me too.
In Grace Kids, we use the NIRV, then it's the NIV Revised for kids. And so those are two translations that we would suggest, but make sure that they do have a full text Bible that's easy to read so that they can get in the word themselves. Say things to them like, don't get tired of doing the right thing. Can I pray with you about that? Model prayer with them. Pray with them at night. I think at this age, it's tempting, really at every age, it's tempting at bedtime to just put them to bed because you've had a long day, you're tired, and all you want to do is, you know, go sit in your bath or talk to your husband or watch a show and decompress. I think it's really tempting to do that. But,
you know, I was thinking about this last night and I thought, it's not a huge regret, but it's a little bit of a regret I have, because I think back to when, you know, I have five kids, so we had some years there where their ages were all close together. And you're right. I was just, night, love you, quick little prayer, instead of really, I mean, I think I did it right. But I think you always look back and you're man, I wish I knew then what I know now.
Right. You know? And you can't do every night perfect, right? And you're not going to do every year perfect. But what the way that you build and maybe even practicing three nights a week, you know, making yourself push through and going and spending that 30 minutes with them when they lay down in bed, those times are going to become so precious to you.
They really want to talk.
Because
their
mind's
kind of clear and
it's dark, so they're not feeling the pressure of your eyes on them. And they're going to share things that they may not share otherwise. And I think maybe not necessarily deep spiritual things at second and third grade, but when they become at fifth and sixth, seventh and eighth, ninth and tenth, really into their senior year in college, if you've established that that they're valuable and that that time with them is valuable to you, they're going to share some really vital things that you're not going to want to miss.
Teresa, hopefully you're not tucking your kids in bed in college. But
yeah, yeah. I'm not tucking. I'll tell you what, though. I do love when they come crawl in bed with me. Yeah. I don't crawl in bed with them so often. But yeah, especially the ones in college. I wish I could. Okay, well, we've talked about some important conversations that we need to have over the second and third grade years. We also want to talk to you about six things that every kid needs, things that are going to be really vital to their development over the next year, 365 days. And those six things are love, work, fun, stories, tribes, and words. And so let's talk for a minute about love. Every kid needs love over time to give them a sense of self-worth. We can show them love by being interested. We talked from the very beginning, you're going to help answer their question of do I have what it takes by engaging their interests. And so engaging their interests over time shows them love, being curious about what they love in their activities and encouraging their efforts. All of that is showing them love over time.
Even when they make mistakes. You know, yeah. That it, I love you no matter what.
And, that's right.
You know, maybe you grew up in a family. My husband grew up in a family where he absolutely knew he was loved later in life. I mean, he really never questioned, but his parents didn't say it, and he really missed it. And so he purposed when he had kids to really make sure he practiced just even saying, I love you.
Yeah.
You can't say that too much.
Yeah, you can't. I think, yeah, like you said, helping them push through setbacks, because they're going to have setbacks, and letting them feel the feelings and you know, grieving if they have to grieve or rejoicing when they rejoice, but showing value to what they're experiencing is showing them love over time, and that's going to develop their self-worth. Stories over time give them a bigger perspective of the world. It's so easy for kids to be, this is all about me, right? From the very beginning, from birth, everything is all about them. The when they need to eat, when they need to sleep, what they need to watch, and at what they need to eat, all of that growing, they're told from the very beginning that everything's about you. And so helping them hear stories over time gives them a bigger perspective of the world. Stories from your family, stories about when they were little or when you were first married, stories about your
parents.
When you
were in third grade or second grade.
Yes, that's right. When you were a kid. Stories from the Bible, just stories that you read, your favorite stories as a child or your favorite stories from the Bible. Make up stories. My husband used to always tell the most creative stories, and my kids loved when he would make up stories. So all of those things, some good stories for them to read or for you to read to them are, do you have some, Molly?
Well, Stuart Little.
Yeah, that's a great
a favorite.
One. Yes.
Maybe Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Pippi Longstocking, The Jungle Book.
Charlotte's
Web. Those are
Web.
All age appropriate.
Yeah, they are. So every child needs stories over time. And so we would encourage you to help them gain a bigger perspective. They also need work. Work over time establishes significance. It helps them know we're part of a team. We do this together. It takes our whole family to run, and all of us are an important part of the family.
And you might think, work? I mean, there's a lot of phases, but you know, really, we have things kids can do at every single phase.
Yeah.
You know, two-year-olds can do work.
Yeah,
sure. Picking up their toys. Yeah. So work that a third grader could do is maybe bandage a cut, gather all the trash bags out of the trash out of the bathrooms or the different rooms and put it away, rake leaves,
fold laundry.
Yeah, empty the dishwasher.
Wrap a present.
Make a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, they can. They can begin to cook, and that's something that would be fun for you to do with them. Make a recipe together. That would also help them learn healthy habits if you can, and you know, they're thinking like scientists. So all the things that go in the recipe and how that works, they're learning to do those things, and they can do some of them. So let them do it.
They can definitely make their own bed and clean their room.
For sure. Yeah. Another thing that they need over time is fun. And fun is something that we've talked a little bit about. You know, they definitely love to have fun. They're motivated by fun. Mm-hmm. They want that's what they want to do all the time. You know this. So that's nothing new to you. But fun gives them a sense of connection. It helps create memories. Helps bond them to the family. It's so important to have fun with the family, to do activities together, play games. There's lots of games that you can play. I'm sure you have some favorites that you played with your kids.
Well, we liked Battleship because I had boys. Farkle, Pictionary, checkers. I mean, so many kids at this age really love chess and checkers. I'm surprised by that, but they really are learning that. Ticket to Ride is a popular game these days. And then just any activities. You can run around the backyard. Maybe, you know, some of your kids really enjoy crafts, stringing beads, or, you know, you could buy a little pre-assembled craft kit that they can do.
Jumping on the trampoline outside. That was something we loved to do when the kids were in, you know, elementary school, is get out there and all of us would get on the trampoline for a few minutes and play games, different makeup games to play together and do. But they're really motivated by fun, and that establishes memories, mm-hmm. and it helps them be connected to your family and to friends. Another thing that they need is tribes. You know, that connection establishes a sense of belonging. They need all the people. Mm-hmm. There is going to come a time where
you need all the people.
That's right. That's such a good point, Molly. Yes, find your community, those people that have kids the same age as you, and have community, because you're going to need other people saying the same things that you're saying. There's going to come a time where your voice is not going to be as influential as it was before. And honestly, there's going to come a time where they don't listen to it. Now, just to encourage you, that changes and they do come back around, mm-hmm. and they begin listening to it again. But there is some phases in those teen years where they're not listening to what you're saying. Oftentimes my kids would come home and say, "You're not going to believe what Heather said," or what, you know, one of the student ministers said, or one of their teachers said. And I would think to myself, we've been saying that all your life.
Yeah. If I had a penny for every time that's happened.
Yes. But they don't hear it often when we're saying it, because there comes a time where they're listening to other voices. So the more voices that you can get saying the same things, building that their tribe, that they know they have people.
Grandma and grandpa, coaches, teachers, small group leaders, pastors, school workers.
And your friends and family. All of those people are going to give them a sense of belonging. They'll know they have people. They'll know they have their tribe. And so a tribe gives them a sense of belonging. And words. Words are so important. What we say to them really matters and impacts and influences them. And so words over time give them direction. It really helps them understand who they are, who God is, who their people are. So say things like, "Good morning, I love you."
I'm really proud when you did whatever. Yeah. You know, work hard. Thank you. Please. I mean, we model for our kids really how to engage with neighbors and people at the grocery store, and how kind we are. Manners, you know, they take their cues from us for sure. So.
Another thing to consider is that they're still learning vocabulary. So talking to them in the words that you would talk to with your coworkers or your friends, the more the better, helping them hear all the words. And when you talk to them, make eye contact. Let them know that you're listening to them, you're talking to them.
So important.
You're engaging with them and that they're valuable, that their time is valuable. So words over time are going to give them direction. And really what we want you to know is that the rhythm you create in your home is going to develop their character, right? It's going to become, it's what shapes your home. It's what shapes the values of your home, and what shapes the character of your family is the rhythm. You only have so many weeks, that every week has potential. So the secrets to making the most of each phase with your child is to take advantage of those weeks. Create a rhythm by leveraging our times together.
So some of those rhythms are morning time, drive time, meal time, and bedtime. But if you think about it, you're not going to have the same rhythms throughout their life. So when they're little, these are the rhythms you're going to have. But you're not going to have some of those rhythms as they're moving into their teenage years when you're not driving them around anymore. Perhaps they're driving themselves. So at this phase, though, the morning time just looks like being a coach. You know, your attitude in the morning maybe sets the tone for the whole day. You know, hey, good morning. You're going to have a great day.
Yes.
You know, that's really a time to really start off their day well and give them purpose.
Yeah.
Hope, maybe pray for them as they're going off to school. Drive time, that's really a time to be a friend and interpret life during those informal conversations you have in the car as you travel.
Yeah.
And, you know, we spend a lot of time in the car.
Yeah, we do spend a lot of time in the car. And those conversations that aren't face-to-face, it's easier for kids to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure. What about mealtime? Just being a teacher, talking through maybe some of the hard things of the day, having some conversations, real intentional conversations.
Yeah, establishing values while you eat together.
Those can really be precious. And then, like Teresa already said, bedtime. You know, you can really be a counselor during that time, help mm-hmm. them through, you know, some of their hard little things that are really important to them, even though they probably are going to seem pretty tiny at second grade and third grade, but they're important.
They
strengthens
important.
Your relationship.
I think, one thing to consider is their relationships. You know, I think all of us have had issues with friends from the time we can remember, and we even do as an adult, and that's something that with my kids, we constantly talked about, and just helping them navigate that so that they learn how to be a good friend. They learn how to not take things personally or how to grieve things that do hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
All being a counselor when it's at bedtime. And really, Molly, these rituals, these routines that you've talked about, these rhythms, morning time, drive time, meal time, bedtime, those are all mentioned in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
in Scripture. And so in Deuteronomy 6:4, it says, "Hear, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commands I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads and write them on the door frames of your homes." And I think those are the things, you know, when you lie down and when you get up, when you sit down to eat, these are very biblical concepts that when establishing a rhythm of really pointing to your kids to Jesus is going to shape the values in your home.
Let's talk about parental influence.
Yeah.
This was super eye-opening to me, or just revelational.
Yeah.
When you just really think through how parents start off with really low relational influence and high positional influence.
Yeah,
which is
practically what that means is, you know, you're feeding them, you're changing them, you're putting them down to bed and getting them up. You're positionally, you're present and you're there, and you have this influence of, you can stop them from running in the street, and you can, you know, make them eat healthy food, not make them, but encourage them to eat healthy food and only offer healthy food,
mm-hmm.
right? You're very positionally influencing them at that point.
But our one primary goal then is to rely less on our positional influence and really increase our relational influence.
Yeah.
So I'm really even going to say that again, because we're trying to build relationship. We're not going to be as hands-on as they grow through these phases, because our goal is to launch them well into the world, to be an image bearer.
That's right.
And to know Jesus and to be able to do this on their own. And so that is really our goal. And we really wrestle with how to create those boundaries. It's way harder on us to do that than it is kids. They just move through
right.
that effortlessly. And we're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to let go. I don't want to let you, you know, fly. But unfortunately, the amount of hours a parent has to invest in their kids relationally really reduces drastically with every stage. So when I looked at this, I was like, okay, wow, this is sobering. Because when you have a preschooler, you have 12 hours a day with them. All day,
of positional every day. Influence.
Yes.
Yep. All day, every
where
day.
Where you're doing all the things. And then as an elementary kid, you have 6 hours.
Right.
If they go to school.
Automatically cut in half.
In half. And then middle schooler
4 hours.
Really goes down to 4 hours.
Yeah.
Because they're getting involved in extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
Friends. They don't want to just hang out and be with you.
Yeah. And so as your positional influences decrease, you really want that relational influence to increase. You want to have credibility with them. You want them to know that they can trust you with your reactions, right? You want to know that when you say something, they're listening because they do trust you. So, man, that relational influence is is really all you have, because then when they're in high school, you have 2 hours of positional influence.
Yeah.
You see them maybe 2 hours a day.
Maybe 2 hours.
Yeah, I can believe it because I'm living there.
Yeah.
Now, I very rarely see my kids.
I mean, so as you're always discipling, but you're discipling relationally as you go. That's your goal.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if I only knew then what I know now, you know, every phase is important. Every age, there's things to capitalize on and things to leverage to help influence their future. And every phase lays a foundation for the next year and what's to come. You'll only know them as a third grader this year, you know, for the remainder of this year. And then they'll be, fourth grade and we'll be on to a next phase. And so every phase is important.
Don't miss it.
Yeah. And every parent wants to understand their kids better. And it seems like just about the time that they understand their current phase and start feeling like a rock star parent, we've got this, the kids move into their next phase and we feel in over our heads again. And I mean, I know that this to be true with my own kids. It's everyone is like, whew, I'm learning how to do this. I've had that conversation with almost all of my kids, like, you're gonna have to be patient with me. I need to figure out how to be the parent of a teenager or, you know, of a college student or whatever. But the good news is we have amazing resources, and this phase project is one of them to help equip you, and we want to partner with you. We want to be your cheerleader. And so we would love for you to engage with us. I know I speak for both of us when we say email us, call us, text us. We want to connect with you. We want to help point you in the right direction. We are your biggest fans and we're for you.
Yeah, at every campus we have resources even that are written. We have books and pamphlets. And and another thing we'd like to mention is the Parent Queue. It's an app that is really incredible, and it helps you. You can put in each one of your children, and it tells you, hey, here's something they're going through during this phase. Kind of reminds you. And
I think another tool is Studio TV, 252 studiotv.com. That has all of the Bible stories that we watch on Sunday mornings. You can find them there. It tells you, it provides for you at their age, what are the drive time things that you can be talking about? What are the bath time things that you can be talking about when you have a preschooler? What are you know, these different cues that you can have to help establish the rhythm in your home? Those are two great ways, the Parent Queue app and the Studio252TV.com.
And maybe just to wrap up, you know, we hope that you're encouraged by what you've heard this today, that really you feel more equipped,
more empowered,
more understood, more seen.
Yes.
Because that's really what we want for you. And I think maybe just think through what you've heard and look at where you're at and think how you could make a few small incremental changes that could really make a big impact and change in your family. And just start working on some of these things, and you're going to really see God come in, help you, bless you, and help grow your family.
Yeah. And just to piggyback off of that, I would really encourage you to seek the Lord, to spend your own time in His Word, listening to praise music, praying on your knees, and really gaining your peace and your hope and your adequacy through Him, so that you can parent out of a position of being filled, not out of depletion, because I think that's often where we sit in parenting. So we want to thank you for joining us. We consider it a privilege and an honor to partner with you and to walk beside you in this journey. We'll talk soon.